let's see. I see that the I just saw a little note come up saying that the meeting recording had been paused. I'm not sure why. Maybe somebody decided that wasn't saying anything interesting. That's one possibility. But it reminded me to turn on the recorder, which I hadn't. So thank you very much. So let me go back and repeat that for a moment, just so the recording is relatively complete. The basic idea here is we'd like to have a methodology, a way of moving forward as we come to the end of this program, a way of really investigating how we engage time and the possibility of doing it differently, and a way of exploring the possibilities for knowledge that are consistent with the vision of time that's presented in the time-space knowledge teaching. So that's where we want to be heading. And I'm sure you've noticed that in this chapter and in the last chapter too, we're starting to focus in more on knowledge. We're looking at time, but we're looking at it through the lens of knowledge. What is the knowledge that our usual understanding of time allows, and how can we move beyond that to a different form of knowledge? So that makes very good sense, because the next section of the book is on knowledge. We are not going to work with that next section in the next course, which starts in September. Instead, as you know, we're going to shift to a broader presentation of the TSK vision as a whole that draws on all the books, and the courses are going to serve in part as a teacher training program. So that'll be a big shift. But of course, it would be a wonderful exercise and a wonderful, this is my homework assignment to you for over the month of August, I guess, except those of you who are on retreat will have to condense it a little. And that is to read the knowledge section of Dynamics on your own in light of the work we've been doing with time. And if this makes sense to you, also in light of the work that some of us did last year with space. And there'll be many opportunities to see how those three come together. So there'd be a little sense of closure in that way before we start up with the next program. So that's my general overview of where we're headed. Michael makes a very good comment here. He says, a methodology, perhaps more like a rhythm, a new skip in our step. I think that's really good, Michael, and I really hesitated over the word methodology, because when we understand methodologies in terms of linear time, then they sound very rigid. We think about science, we think about plans and programs, and that's not at all what we're talking about. We're looking for a methodology that is indeed a lot more related to rhythm, and aliveness, and creativity. So maybe the word methodology is not a good one at all, but we will look at that as we go a little further into this, because this really is one of the questions that the reading is taking us toward. But thanks for that footnote or corrective, or see, footnote sounds too much like regular methodology too. Thanks for bringing in that different rhythm. Okay, so I think actually, the question gets raised pretty much at the beginning of the reading when Rinpoche introduces the idea of the body of time. And those of you who've read around in the TSK books know that at different times he talks about the body of knowledge. That's probably the most common usage. But he also talks about the body of space and the body of time, and I think there are others which I don't remember at the moment. So he defines the body of time here, and in a sense, that's what we're going to be working with today. It manifests in different ways, but it's a theme that shows up throughout this reading. So he defines the body of time as an unlimited rhythm expression. This grows out of the sense that whatever appears appears without any commitment to linear time. So usually we say appearance moves in an ABC progression, or past, present, future progression, And then we connect that up to causality, right? And we say, this appears because of that. That's our usual way of understanding things. And Rinpoche is suggesting that you could also understand appearance very differently in, with a kind of a sense of randomness. He uses the word. He says, he asks the question at the beginning of the reading for today. He says, well, how is linear time established? Linear time seems to be one of the governing principles of our experience. And he says, okay, one answer to that question is it's not established at all. Instead of linear time, there's what he calls the random alongsideness of all that appears. And a little later, I want us to practice with that. In the orientation, I suggested practicing with that concept of alongsideness, which we will come back to. But he doesn't stop there in this reading. He says, well, that's one way of talking about it. That came up in the previous reading. He said, you could also describe it very differently. And so then he goes back to the idea of the universal unique, of a wholeness, of an appearance without a source. But then he introduces this idea, and this is close to the point, or related to the point, that Michael just made. He says, there's a universal unique, there's a wholeness. Within that whole, various rhythms express and move, presenting without limitation. That possibility of rhythm, of a movement that doesn't move, because after all, in the usual sense of movement, the linear sense of movement, which goes along with linear time, has this structure of from and to. Right? And Rinpoche has many times in the work that we've done as we've investigated time, has many times said, you know, we need to drop that commitment to that kind of sequencing, to experience having a from or a to. And that's what the alongsideness, the idea of alongsideness, has to do with that. Here he's saying there can be movement, but it's movement in terms of rhythm. So you might think about an instrument, a musical instrument that is there only for the sake of rhythm. So you know, in a rock band, you'd say the bass plays some of that role. It just sets the rhythm. It's not going anywhere. Right? There's no melodic progression. That's not completely true of the way, you know, a bass works in a band. But you could think about a tambura in Indian music. Not something I'm expert on, but you know that kind of droning, or the droning that you get with a harmonium, I guess they're called. There's a movement that goes nowhere, but it introduces a rhythm, and that introduces a creative complexity. And here he's talking about this unlimited rhythm expression. That's one of the ways in which he describes it, and that's the way he defines the body of time. Right? And he says, the body of time transitions the appearance of what appears. It enacts the experience. It does all of that, and it allows for the conceptual separation that linear time depends on, past, present, future. But that's not it. Right? It allows for measuring. That's an expression of that rhythm. So rhythm becomes really central here. And one way to explore that, which I haven't done much with, but would be very interesting, is to look for rhythm in music, but maybe also to look for rhythm in daily life. I think I told the story here. I know I've done it in the last couple of weeks, and I'll just repeat it briefly here if I have, about this a sociologist who was analyzing through careful analysis of video the interaction of children on a playground. And he gradually came to realize that there was a rhythm that was active in all of what people, all of what the children were doing on the playground. And there was one little girl who seemed to be completely in harmony with that rhythm. And you know, you might say she was somehow conducting the whole experience in the playground, but you might also say in the other sense of conducting, that she was just in sync with it, in harmony with it. And I don't know if that analysis was right, but it's a nice way to think about it. If we could be in harmony with the rhythm of experience, with that kind of creative energy that's welling forth, without having a sense that we need to go somewhere and do something. That's what Rinpoche is talking about when he talks about the body of time. And it's very different. So the question comes up, and he introduces this on page 164, at the top, in the first full paragraph. He says, for each apparent mechanism that unfolds in time, so I'm not going to talk about mechanisms so much, because mechanisms and methodologies and so on, that's, you know, we kind of understand that. It's a good idea, I think, to have a different vocabulary. And I notice a couple of other comments. So Michael comes back and says, the singing, or which is the singing, when the wind soughs in the branches. You know, the world presents its rhythms. We don't have to, you know, music, you could say, shares in that. And I'm not, this is not something I've thought about a lot, so don't pay too much attention to what I'm saying now. But there's an underlying rhythm, it seems to me. Sudhi says here that requires complete flexibility, which it does. Although you shouldn't think of that as a, you know, like, oh, well, if I can't be completely flexible, I can't do this. No, you can introduce more flexibility into your life. Maybe you'd say in some sense, if you're talking about the universal unique, that would also be a universal flexibility. But if we can begin to call into question our various rigidities, our various mechanisms, our various commitments, then more flexibility will develop. And that is where we're looking. So Michael's comment on Sudhi, and I'm reading these because, as you know, well, not all of you were on the computer, so you don't have access to this. Michael says, I think with respect to Sudhi's comment about flexibility, is it the wind that has to be completely flexible or the tree that has to be completely flexible? Which is a really nice question to ask. The wind is completely flexible, isn't it? Sudhi answers the tree. The tree, that's us. We say, well, we're the ones that have to learn how to be flexible. So perhaps one answer to that would be, well, we identify with the tree, but what if we identified with the wind? Or what if we identified with the whole of the universal unique, which is going to include the tree and the wind? These are some of the questions, the kinds of questions that it's valuable to ask. I'm not saying you need to answer them. We're moving a lot here in the realm of images, right? And it's okay to just let the image carry you. And if it doesn't, then move on to some other image or some other way of thinking about this or investigating it. We're not so interested in arriving at answers, but images and a sense of rhythm, a sense of movement, a sense of aliveness, that's what I was trying to really point to when I talked about a different kind of methodology. So now here in the reading, we get to another way of asking that question. So at the top of 164, Rinpoche says, for each apparent mechanism that unfolds in time, there is a fitting knowledge. So linear time is itself a mechanism. So Rinpoche goes on and asks the question, what is the knowledge that is fitting or suitable to the body of time? And that's where I want to go. But I want to, before we do that, I think we need to clarify, or I think it would be helpful to clarify, What is the knowledge that goes with linear time? Because Rinpoche actually answers that question here in this paragraph, or he offers some pointers towards how that would work. He says, there's a certain kind of knowledge that is not going to be the knowledge that's suitable to the body of time. And in describing that, I think he's describing the attributes of the knowledge that we work with as long as we're committed to linear time. So he says, knowledge can't inquire into lineage, right? It's because lineage has to do with causality. And, of course, lineage has that sense of the linear. One thing comes after another. So you can't inquire into lineage, which means you can't really inquire into causality. Of course, you can, but that's going to be a kind of a lower-level knowledge. It's not going to be the knowledge connected with the body of time. It's going to be connected with linear time. So you can't inquire into lineage. You can't trace processes, which again is going to be a kind of a linear way, right? You can't rely on concepts or properties or distinctions, which is exactly what our knowledge relies on. So the link between linear time and our way of knowing is absolute. You know, they're completely bound up with each other. If you have one, you have the other. And those are the kinds of knowledge that fit with our usual understanding of time. And now we would like to ask, what would a knowledge be like that fits with the body of time? Because that's where we want to move. It's not as though we want to get there, because that sounds like it's, you know, very much connected to linear time. But we would like to explore that possibility of a knowledge that's connected to the body of time, which is also the universal unique and the unlimited rhythm expression, right? This whole sense of the unlimited, of not being bound by our usual structures, our usual mechanisms. And I'm going to speculate about that for a moment, and then I'd like to get us to the point where we can do some practice. If you say we want a knowledge that is more connected to wholeness than to tracing and lineage and causality and concepts and all of those things, we have a word that you might think kind of fits that, partly because the word is so vague, you don't know what it's saying really, and that is the word intuition. You might say we need to rely on a kind of intuitive knowledge. Or you might say, especially if you have studied in certain kinds of Buddhist traditions, you might say pure awareness. Right? Intuition, pure awareness. I don't think that's good enough because those terms, by their very nature, I don't want to say this in a negative way, but they don't leave us with any place to explore. They don't allow for any possibilities. You know, intuition is kind of mysterious, and pure awareness comes, maybe might be very appropriate to talk about, but you know, it doesn't tell us how that might be connected to the body of time. And we have to ask ourselves, if we rely on intuition, you know, the way people tend to say sometimes, well, it's just I have an intuitive sense, My hunches, if we rely on all that, are we really freeing ourselves from concepts and properties and distinctions, or are we kind of shifting into a different set of concepts and properties? I think all of that is we can leave all of that open. I think instead it's very helpful to go to what Rinpoche says here, when he basically says, look, we don't need to answer the question because we're not establishing an alternative. You know, the kind of knowledge that fits with the body of time is X. You know, that would establish a particular kind of knowledge. And he says here in the second paragraph on 164, he says, if that's the way you're thinking, it's probably the wrong way to think. Maybe he says the question is wrongly framed because it presupposes established distinctions. And that would be my concern with a concept like intuition as well. He says, whatever we imagine the possibilities for knowledge to be, the body of time envisions and expands a fuller understanding. So we have to remember that the kinds of language that Rinpoche is using are meant to be as open as possible, it seems to me. The universal unique, the finity of knowledge, let's say, the unlimited rhythm expression. There's always the sense of whatever you say, you have to be able to go beyond that. And that's why I think he says that the body of time doesn't establish, it invites, it allows for possibilities. So at this point in the reading, Rinpoche introduces some questions, and I want to come back to those. But I actually want to start first with a different kind of practice that goes to some of the themes that we've been exploring. Let me acknowledge here Sudhi's under, I don't want to characterize what you said, Sudhi, what would it mean? What kind of knowledge is fitting? I think that's right. Sudhi is offering a description here. To be present without bias, with all senses open and flexible. That's a very nice description. You could put that alongside intuition, which is very vague, or awareness, or many other ways you could describe it. And you're pointing us towards something which is very nice. The senses are open, and there's no bias. That's very good. What we want to be looking for, or the particular avenue in that we're trying to explore, is time. It's interesting. We're not trying to jump to some other version of time. What we want to do is look at our usual ways of structuring experience, of temporal experience, and the mechanisms that are involved in that, which are the mechanisms of linear time, and mechanisms like causality and past, present, and future, and so on. We want to be looking at those, and the practice that I want us to look at now, and it's been introduced, it's been discussed pretty extensively, really, in the last couple of readings, is not accepting the mechanism as establishing anything. You can say we live in a world in which linear time flows. That's our usual understanding, and that depends on certain mechanisms. And those mechanisms absolutely work flawlessly. You could say more or less. Maybe sometimes there are things where you'd say, well, I don't understand how this could possibly have happened. But ordinarily, it's like gravity. Past and present and future are linked up in a certain way and not in some other way. The mechanisms just work. They're very effective. But at the same time, you want to say those mechanisms don't establish anything. The outcome of what happens when A causes B don't really tell us anything except for the fact that we're operating in a temporal order in which causality works. So the suggestion that Rinpoche makes, and I want to look at it now in terms of alongsideness, which is a term that mostly came up in the last reading, the suggestion that he makes is that you can see the mechanism alongside what it presents. And another way he talks about it, let me go back to this for a moment, because this is basically where I'd like us to work. It's on 161. He's talking about alongsideness and how things point back and forth to each other, and then the mechanism of linear time. And then he says, this is actually the part where I think in the orientation I said this was a sophisticated analysis that we'd have to work with more. I want to go into it for a specific purpose right now. He says, there's no causal structure that accounts for appearance. And I just finished saying there is a causal structure that accounts for appearance. But the way you can say both those things at once is to say the causal structure is a part of what appears. That's the quality of alongsideness. And Rinpoche describes that. He says events do not appear in any order. So not past, present, future, not A causes B. They pop up almost accidentally together with the rules that claim to govern their arising. And this is the part that we want to investigate now, experientially, for a few minutes. And he gives examples. Cause and effect, persistence over time. So an object exists now, and it still exists now, and it still exists now. That's persistence over time. Right? Transitions in time. Changes through time. None of those are pre-existing. Those are all mechanisms. This is the language he's using. Right? And each of those mechanisms is a part of appearance. So this is a very interesting possibility, and I think you can explore it experientially. You have to do it with a kind of a light touch. So maybe we have a little bit of a clue as to how to do that in, and I'll just use Michael's words here, You have to explore it with a kind of a rhythm of exploration, a skip in your step, you know, a lightness, an aliveness. That's what we'd like to bring to our experience. And what are we going to explore in that light, skipping way? We're going to explore the arising of experience, how events happen one after another. Which, of course, is what's always going on. It's always available to us to look at. What we want to be looking at is that in that moving from one thing to another, the arising of one thing after another, all of the mechanisms are also arising at the same time. So the very sense, well, this happened because of that, that's arising right now. It's not outside the arising. Everything is laid out. Everything is alongside everything else. And all of those mechanisms, causality and persistence and transition and changes, each of them shows up. And each of them shows up again and again and again from moment to moment. But the very idea of again and again and again and again is also something that shows up. So concepts are always going to operate on that level, and the language we use to describe it is always going to operate at that level. But we want to be able, we want to see what happens when we try to explore that experientially. So that's what we want to look at for a couple of minutes now. Are there any questions about that? If the question is how to do it, well, we have to just explore it and see. If the question is, how can I do it, we have to just look and see. So most of the questions are just, I'll try it and see. That's the answer. But if there are any questions about what it is that we're trying to do. Okay, then let's do it. And let's take a little longer. This is a fairly subtle point. Let's take a little longer than we usually do in these phone calls. Let's take about 4 minutes, okay? So we'll start now. Okay, so let's come together. So one of the things that we know the most certainly of all, one of the things we're most sure about, is that time unfolds from moment to moment. And this exercise asks us to question that. So I'm interested in any comments you have, any thoughts. We are not necessarily looking for experiences that are extraordinary, that go out of the ordinary. It's much more that we're looking for experience. We're looking at experience in a different way. Or maybe a better way to say that is we're asking how we could engage experience with the knowledge that is suitable to the body of time. Okay, well, this is a little unusual. We're not really having people jumping in too much. Here's Michael. So my experience arrives like a stream, unbroken, uninterrupted. Perhaps that quality in my experience prompts me to posit an abiding, substantial world as its source. That the substantial linear realm isn't necessary as a source. It could be awareness that has this quality of abiding, changing, but with no gaps. Okay. Well, it's true, you know, we posit an abiding substantial world as the source of our experience. And part of what this way of looking at time as arising in a kind of random way is to say that, part of what that means is to say that is to point us toward the fact that we just offer up an abiding world as the explanation for each moment of experience. That's how things make sense to us. And it's not a bad way, you know, it's a very appropriate way for things to make sense to us. But it's still a making sense that is a particular moment in the arising or a particular dimension of the arising, and nothing is established. And that's very much what Rinpoche is pointing to here. Now, is it awareness that does this? Well, the natural concern, if we said it that way, would be to say, well, now you're trying to establish awareness as the source. We really want to be able to operate with the idea of what Rinpoche calls in one of the books, I don't remember where, a no source from view. We don't need that idea of source. It's an idea. Right? We don't ever arrive at the source. It's an idea. Okay, David writes, I become sense aware. The alongsideness of many sound manifestations, feeling of body sense, touching its surroundings, visual onrush of color tones and movement. This back and forth focus on sense inputs, I become aware of space surrounding and permeating these arisings and deeper feelings. There's a rhythm to these accountings of my sensual experience and building of enjoyment. Okay, well, we're going to return to this idea of rhythm, which we started with, which Michael pointed us toward at the very beginning of the session today. I think that's a really good place to look. You know, it may be that the questioning that comes in this kind of a practice is it's just a questioning that shows up as a kind of an appreciation or an enjoyment of what's arising. It may not be a particular questioning at all. I was looking into this some yesterday, this set of questions, and at one point I heard a leaf fall. There was a plant in a room, and I was sitting in the room, and the leaf fell, and it hit the floor. And this is going to be hard to put into words, but there is just a certain sense of the causal connection. You know, my automatically saying a leaf fell and hit the floor was just as real as and no more real than the sound, and really came with the sound. And thinking in that way for me in that moment kind of stirred something about the validity that we assign to temporal sequence and causality. It stirred something, it opened it up a little, but it wasn't anything, you know, wasn't like some new insight. It just had a sense of being more open, more, you could say, part of a rhythm. And that's one way of doing it. But what David describes here, the building of enjoyment, is another way, and very different. You may find, you will find your own way. Sudhi says, it seems the imposed structures of cause and effect are able to halt, I think, when the silence of time is speaking. And then the enormity of this insight results in Sudhi typing nonsense for a moment here. So I don't know what that means. Sorry, just letters that don't come into anything, that don't turn into words. So the silence of time speaking, shapes and colors. Yeah, that's very nice. The silence of time, the aliveness of time, there's a speaking that doesn't say anything. Just like there's a rhythm that doesn't go anywhere. And Robert writes, and this will be the last comment that I work with, and then I want to say one more thing and then we'll end. He says, bringing the mechanisms into focus alongside gave them a feeling of being more and more mind-made as opposed to inherently implicit and unquestionable, allows a questioning that is so fundamental that it feels a little uncomfortable. Truly, truly fundamental. That's absolutely right. So the one other point that I want to make is the relation of this way of investigating to the theme of creative insight. You know, we all know something about creativity, but there's an underlying question, which is, you know, where does that creative impulse or insight come from? You know, when we have a new idea, when we envision a new possibility, when we form or create something that is new, what's the source of that? And you know, you might well want to explore the possibility that that has to do with this kind of rhythm interaction. You know, this infinite rhythm interaction that doesn't establish or label anything. And there's a good statement that points in that direction pretty much at the end of our reading, at the bottom of 165, where he's talking about not insisting on anything. Time, in the ordinary sense, sets things up. But the body of time, remember, he says, doesn't establish, it only invites. And he says about eight lines up, when we learn to look through time, the countless manifestations that shape and express experience simply exemplify time's unitary power. And then he says, and this is where we'll end today, the less we insist, the closer we draw to the invisible energy of the body of time, the creative impulse through which appearance itself manifests. Allied with this creative force, we approach each challenge with new resources. So one of the questions that naturally arises with TSK is, is this unfolding in a positive direction for me? Do I understand the range of change and possibility that has been made available here? And one way in which you can ask in your own experience is this. Are you approaching each challenge with a resource, a new resource, or new resources that have to do with the creative impulse of time itself, the creative impulse through which appearance itself manifests, which really has nothing to do with mechanisms, but may have something to do with rhythms, rhythms that go nowhere, rhythms that don't rely on a from and a to. Okay, let's stop there for today, and we'll see you next week, and we'll see many of you at the retreat that follows soon after. Goodbye.